As always, this episode of the Talking Wolves podcast is brought to you by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Why not make Green King your go-to destination for this season's final stretch? With delicious food and refreshing beverages, every single one of Wolves' televised fixtures is on show at their venues. And with 900 sport venues across the UK, there's a chance there's one just walking distance from where you are. And watching football is way better with your friends and family. So why not get the squad together for some title showdowns, the race for European qualification, and nail-biting relegation six-pointers. So don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on.
Welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cooper. And today the lineup is a little bit depleted. Dave is off in Budapest enjoying himself on the stag do. I've not heard from him in the last couple of days. So I'm hoping that he's all right, bless him. I know we know on this podcast he can't drink very much, but yeah, from his Instagram it looks like he's having a great time. Donning, I don't know what you call it, lads. Like a sunflower hat or like a fedora, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you describe that as, Sam?
Looks like a bit of a dare, I believe. He probably lost a drinking game, I imagine.
Yeah, probably something you'd give the stag, to be honest. But as you heard, then I'm not on my own. I'm joined by Jord Russell. Jord, how you keeping, Mush?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm in the process of moving house and moving this week. That's why there's shit everywhere. It'll be my last podcast of the year too, because I'm moving Friday. And I know the lads are doing the end of season one the week after, but just got loads to do. But it's stressful, isn't it? Especially when you're in a chain, it's just having to shift everything. I'm in an apartment as well, moving to a house, so having to get everything down the stairs. Tough, mate. Really tough. Yeah. But also joined by Sam Beakin, who I can only describe as if Sam Ricketts and Tom Aspinall from the UFC decided to have a child. How you doing, mate? Yeah, thanks for coming on again.
No, it's all good. I'm feeling a bit like Boubacar Traoré at the moment. I've had one guest appearance, and I'm in for the long run, I hope. So no, it's been good. It's been good, and I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, you've slotted in seamlessly. One thing I will say, Sam, I listened to the couple of podcasts that you were on recently when I weren't on, and I was very impressed. I thought you came across excellently.
Thank you.
There's no punchline. No.
Well, it usually is. Yeah. You. I was sat there.
No. But we have quite a lot of guests on, but I think. Listening to you, I was really impressed. Perhaps because I agreed with pretty much everything you were saying. There's nothing like a good echo chamber. So.
Natural pessimism, yeah.
Exactly. But it's been another tough week being a Wolves fan. But I think, Jordan, I don't know, like, I think we're in the same boat as well. It's a tough week for about 90 minutes and you just think, whatever. Like, not arse.
Yeah, of course it is. And, I stepped in on the fans rap for Dave as well this weekend because obviously he's out in Budapest wearing his shit gear. I'm going to feel really bad now if he's ordered all this off ASOS to go to Budapest and really saying how bad it is. Yeah. But anyway, he's wearing some choice clothing, let's put it like that. And like a lot of people on the comments are like, oh, well, I'll say a lot. There's half of people agreed with me and then the other half were like, oh, you're very pessimistic, you're very doom and gloom. But there's nothing to be smart, you know, nothing to smile about in my life if it comes to Wolves right now. It's just one of those things at the moment, isn't it? It's, I chose not to go on the weekend again. Had the availability to go. I had tickets to go. Lovely sponsors of Budweiser.
Thank you very much.
We have to drop that in there. But it's just, you know, we've been doing DIY here as well. And, you know what? I just thought I'll just stick it on in the background and I'll watch it whilst I'm doing some bits. And the fact that, you know, getting offered free tickets and you don't want to go sort of tells you where my headspace is with Wolves at the moment and where how the season's petered out. It's, we're going out with a whimper, really, and what turned out to be, you know, a really promising start. And I think everyone would admit that Gary O'Neill far exceeded expectations. I think it's fair to say probably still has where we come at the end, you know, after the Liverpool game. You know, we still have far exceeded that. But how it's gone since Coventry, it's been really, really poor. And I just fear that we might get a bit of a hangover going into next season, like we did under Bruno Lage. And yeah, it's not where it's not where you want to be, really, at all.
Yeah, I didn't go either just because it was the last weekend I had before to pack everything up. My missus works shift, so like we don't work like the same patterns. And again, I didn't particularly want to go anyway. I didn't watch the first half. I caught bits of the second half, but I have been back and watched it since. And I wasn't impressed. Palace at the minute are a team in form. I think Elise and Eze, not so much Mateta, even though he's in a rich vein of form. I think they are fantastic and could probably go and play for anyone, especially Elise. And I think he will this summer. Sam, but what were your thoughts on the game? Did you go? You're probably a lot more. You're a little bit younger than Jordan, so you're probably a little bit more optimistic and wanting to
You say that. Yeah. I went because I had nothing else to do, to be honest. Thankfully, I had a haircut due straight after the game, so I left on 75 minutes as soon as Eze scored. But yeah, I dragged myself there for those 75 minutes, and like you said, same kind of sentiment. I was very unimpressed, to be honest. I think it was a performance that's been that of many weeks past, to be honest. I think they've looked like they're on the beach since Coventry. There was a bit of a hangover since Coventry, I think, and then that's just followed through into, we hit the magical 40 point mark, or 46 in our case or so, and yeah, they've kind of just sat off it and let. I don't want to give Palace too much credit. I think they're a very good team, and I think they're in, like you said, in a good rich vein of form under Glasner, and he's really turned things around there. But we sure made it easy for them, and I think that was the most disappointing thing. I think player for player, we've got an arguably better squad now. Anyway, even with, you know, now the injuries have come back, I think we've got a better squad than them. But it was just a team that wanted it against a team who didn't in a dead rubber game, and that's only going to cause for one result.
Yeah, I think he's got them playing quite well. As you said, Wharton in the middle as well. He's someone who's getting quite a lot of acclaim. But I weren't impressed. And I know, a couple of weeks ago? I can't remember now, or maybe the last podcast we did. For me, it felt like we were just moaning for an hour. And I made it quite clear through the podcast, like, look, if that's how you perceived it, I'm sorry. We'll try not to have the same this week. We'll try and be a little bit more positive, but we'll touch on the Palace game as we are now, and then Liverpool. But I think really the overarching kind of theme will be kind of reviewing the last kind of 10 games. Because, George, you mentioned the Coventry game. We were plighted by injuries. We were so close to getting into that semi-final. And that has really been the wheels falling off moment, in my opinion. Similar to the Leeds game a couple of seasons ago on the Large. It's almost like cut to the date. Carbon copy of what happened, and after that we couldn't buy a win. My concern and kind of my peeve is, yes, we've had quite a lot of injuries, and I think we've been quite unfortunate that the injuries that we've had have all kind of been in the same area. So some teams might be losing the best centre half and the best centre mid, but we've lost like four out of five attackers, which is pretty unheard of. But every other team has had injuries. And I personally feel like, and I've mentioned it on the podcast previously, if Gary O'Neill keeps saying we tried to get the striker in January, we've got loads of injuries. For me, it's almost like making an excuse for the players to go out there, and if they lose, look at us, woe is me. I don't know if you feel like that. You're almost starting to wear a bit thin, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and it can do. And again, I used the analogy a couple of weeks ago. Like, you know, he knew what the situation was when he got into the club, and it's like, you know, he can't keep beating Fosen with the shitty stick. He knew there was no funds or very little funds this summer, and we were going to sell. And Fosen should have backed him in January. I feel, you know, if what we believe to be led to believe is true, you know, he wanted Brewer in January. By the way, I hadn't even had a kick at Fulham, so God knows, you know, that's been a real shit loan for him. I mean, if we'd have got Brower in January, I think he'd have been fine. I think we'd have been fine. And again, I think we'd have beat Coventry and we'd have carried on whatever our trajectory would have been this season, probably a top 10 finish the way it was going at that point. But you are right. I think it sounds like almost like defeatist mentality. It's giving everyone a cop-out that, you know what? Yeah, VAR's shit. The refs are shit. We've got injuries. All this sort of stuff. We can't buy players. It almost gives the players a cop-out, like you say, that, you know, bad performance or a bad defeat or a bad result. So, well, you know, what do you expect? We've got all these mitigating things against us. And I think there's something to be said about an us versus the world mentality when it's used in the right way and conducted in the right way, where actually you can see it's spirited and dogged, which it was at the first part of the season. Everyone was against us. You know, we had some horrific refereeing decisions, which we discussed. I think it worked. But I'm getting to point now with Gary O'Neill a little bit. And again, I think he's had a very, very good first season with us. I'm getting to this point where I think he's almost getting into the Nuno solutions territory a little bit, where he's saying the same things over and over again. Mm. And all of a sudden, the fans and probably people in the media are going, he said that last week. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, can't keep using it. And I think actually the performances over the last 3 months, what I used on Twitter was rancid. And I think rancid's a fair comment, really. I think there's a lot of, well, to some of the defeats in the last sort of 3 months, I think there is a little bit of subjectivity to it, I guess. There is a little bit of, you know, it'll give them a bit of rope. But the weekend outside of Neto, I don't think there was any nailed on first teamers that were missing. Again, Saar. But I don't think Bentley could have done anything with any of the goals. I can't really point
Dawson at him.
Dawson as well, yeah. Dawson potentially as well. Like, he just got tactically beaten on the weekend. And I know I've said it last week. Glasner's got Palace playing some unbelievable football. Elise and Ezea could go and play wherever they wanted to, like you said already in the summer. But this Palace team, they were 14th before they played us the weekend. That doesn't scream to me a team that's like a very good team who we should be rolling over for and we should be getting battered against, really. And I do say that lightly. They did batter us, like generally in that first half as well, especially. We made them look like Man City at times. And that has to be on the manager. That has to be how he's tactically set up, because I think when I saw the lineup, I thought he got it wrong. We were going with that Lamina, Gomez, Traore, flat midfield three, because too many similarities in that midfield. And it was just poor. I thought it was poor tactically, very naive, and we got everything we deserved on the weekend.
Sam, do you echo those thoughts, or are you still kind of in a camp of O'Neill being right to moan about it every week?
Half and half, I think. I think O'Neill has the right to moan about some things, but those things came a lot earlier in the season. Similar to kind of Jordan, I think I didn't agree with the lineup, to be honest. I think we gave Palace far too much respect off the rip. Not playing a Sarabia, and I know he hasn't been great, but not playing a Sarabia or a Tommy Doyle, it just eliminates our kind of attacking threat. I mean, unless you know, with those midfield three, they're brilliant ball winners. They bring brilliant energy. They're great in the tackle, but the distribution is, you know, leaves something to be desired. And I think that's something that everyone can kind of agree with. Brilliant footballers, but their passing isn't amazing, especially passing through the lines. We've seen a couple of good ones from Lamina, but it's nothing to write home about. And I think missing that gave Glasner less to worry about defensively. I think they've got a decent defence as it is, but it almost became a battle of, well, how are we going to break these lot down? We kind of accepted that they were going to have the ball, and, like, you know, it could have easily been 3 or 4 nil by the 45-minute mark. And I think that was, in that sense, we were lucky that we only went in a couple of goals down. But yeah, battled hard in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half, and then it just all unravelled again.
I don't think the likes of Wang and Cunha are fully fit either. From watching them play, like Cunha, before the injury, you know, he picked the ball up and drive, whereas now he doesn't look like he's got it in him. It looks like to me he's managing something, almost rushed back potentially. But it was just another it was basically a carbon copy of the performances we've seen over the last five, six games. I mean, we've lost at home to West Ham, we lost at home to Bournemouth, we've lost at home to Palace, all teams in and around us. I think that's something that needs to improve. I personally think, say, what are we now in the table? Are we 13th?
14th.
I'll have to go back to our predictions at the start of the season, but I think I said 12th or 13th. Because I remember when I did that feature with TNT Sport, and I said it was just before the Brighton game, before they spanked us, the first home game of the season. And I said, this team is way too good to go down. I don't know where people are getting it from. So I think O'Neill's done a good job, right? But I think we're where I probably expected us to be. I don't think it's anything better than that, personally. I don't know if that's been too harsh, but say if we what could we finish now at the weekend?
14th.
Are you boys? I'll start with you first, Jordy. Are you happy with that? Or do you think that's exceeding expectations, or would you be a little bit disappointed?
I think context is a big thing. So I'm happy contextually about how we are in terms of where we're going to come this season, because we know what a shit show it was in the pre-season with Lopetegui and all that stuff, and we've covered that. And I predicted 16th the start of the season. I thought we'd come. I thought we'd have enough. I didn't think, again, thought we were too good to go down, but I thought we'd have a lot of turmoil. I thought O'Neill wouldn't last the season. I thought we'd have another manager. But I think you are right. The squad is better than going down. So I think he's probably just above. I'd give it like a B minus. I think it was just above par, really. And I think it was end of January. It was looking like, A plus, like genuinely A plus for context and stuff. It's just how it's petered out. And it's happened to us a few times, like say the last season.
It's the exact same. Like
COVID just literally hit March and the wheels come off. But that's because of these small squads we've got, and we haven't got the ability to rotate, and we pick up injuries, and injuries affect us more than other teams because we're playing with a core squad of 16, 17 players. I think the 1 to 11, we've seen it. We beat Man City, we beat Tottenham at home. We've competed with Liverpool first half. We should have been 2 or 3 up in that game. We can compete with these teams. It's just the depth in there, which we know.
I think O'Neill manages his kind of image and public perception very well in these press conferences. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why he goes on about it every week. I think he's letting people know, because he's a bit of a media darling, isn't he? Everyone always says, Gary O'Neill's doing a wonderful job. And he has done a good job. I'm not bashing him. But I think that's probably why he says it, Sam. So it's almost like, look, this isn't on me. I've got no players.
Yeah.
But the last 4 or 5 games, they've had that, and it's got worse. I'm not concerned, but I think I'm a little bit scarred from the Bruno Lage ending, because we all know how that Bruno Lage season started next, and then it doesn't feel like that, because it was desperate, wasn't it? It still feels like there's a real togetherness with the squad now, but I just think I'm a little bit kind of in the back of my mind, it's there a little bit. I don't know if you feel the same, perhaps I'm being a little bit negative.
No, I don't think you're wrong to think that way. I don't think you're wrong to think that way, purely because it's, we've had our hands burnt before by the same kind of pattern of games, and the kind of, it seems to happen, I can't remember the last time it didn't, but even, after the first season in the Prem, the season where we got 7th, but we bottled Europe and lost to Chelsea on the final day. From that point on, it just seems the last 7, 8 games of every single Premier League season have been dire, whether it be result-wise or watching the football. It just hasn't been of the same level. And this, refer back to, where should we be in terms of the table? I think our squad's good enough to be it's a 12th, 13th place squad. And I think, context is a big thing. No pre-season. We'll have to see what happens next season with a pre-season. I think that will make a difference, definitely. But, time will tell. But with that, he needs some support. How much he'll get is, I don't know. And I don't think we need as much as others think we do. I think we're three or four. Well, if we lost a couple of big players, I think we're four or five. But I think right now we're three or four decent 10, 15 million pound signings away from battling that, for pushing for that top 10 again. But yeah, maybe that's my youthful optimism talking. I don't know. But yeah, like I said, time will tell. I think the preseason will be interesting. I definitely think the transfer window will be interesting.
I've seen a couple of people on Twitter, and it is a very small minority questioning whether he should be the manager next season. Now, I'm definitely not in that camp. I think with the players he's got, he's done like a good job. And like you said, with perhaps a little bit more backing or a little bit more luck with injuries in certain areas, we may be talking top half. But he needs backing. But Lage, he should have gone at the end of that season personally. And then they ended 107. Up spending. They ended up spending like 100 million, didn't they, to back him? They brought in Guedes. They brought in Nunes. Who else did they spent some money, right? On probably at the wrong time.
Kalajdzic as well. They brought in, didn't they, on deadline day?
Yes. I would like, and not necessarily just O'Neill, Hobbs to get that back in January. Where they, you know, it looks like they've found a good fit, a cultural fit for the director of football, the manager, and the squad of players. So, I don't think they are going to go out and back him, but I don't necessarily think it's based on a massive sale. Look, there's going to be less to spend if one of the big sales isn't made. Yep. But they've got to give him something. They've got to give him something. I think if they didn't, then you almost. You get what you put in kind of thing, and that could be another 15th, 16th in the table. And if that is the case, if that season ticket waiting list will be, like I say, it'll be dwindling.
Yeah, but you can't afford to stand still in the Premier League. You've seen it with Southampton, you saw it with Leicester. I know Leicester obviously had FFP difficulties the season went down, which is why they didn't spend. But you stand still, you get swallowed up, and that's my fear for us at the moment is. If we don't, again, you don't have to spend massive amounts of money to get good players in, but you also can't be pocketing money every window, if that makes sense. Like, I think your net spend has got to be pretty much zero to 20, 30 million to actually keep going on this hamster wheel. And the problem, because you could quite easily get swallowed up. And I think, realistically, let's be honest, I think Neto will go. I also think that Aitnery or Gomez, one of those two, will end up going as well. And that'll bankroll us getting five or six in the door. And that's not me advocating for those players to go. I just think that's the reality of it. And again, we've had that conversation a few times.
I don't mind that. What they've done before is they've spent loads of money and they've almost like chucked it at the wall and hope it stuck. There's been some good bits of business in there, but... Now I feel like, as I said, they've got the right people in charge. I'm not necessarily against Sam. Obviously, I'd like to keep them both, but ain't Nuri going, Neto going. You get, I don't know, 80, 90 million for the pair. You're still going to have some money left in the bank, and it gives you, say, 100 million to then go and reinforce a squad. But they are going to need to, I feel, bring in more than that, more quantity than that, than going out.
Yeah,
because we need depth.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this past couple of days. From the moment the Neto injury happened, and people were talking about him going and saying, "Oh, his transfer value is going to drop" and such. I think Neto, I was always comfortable with. The two I was uncomfortable with was Aitnori and Gomez. But after thinking about it further, I think out of the two, I would much prefer Aitnori to go. The reason being, I think he is. The most difficult to replace, yes, but for the money that we could potentially get for him, you know, you're talking 45 million plus, aren't you? For mm-hmm. for 45 million plus for a left back who, let's be honest, is brilliant to watch and he gets you off your seat and he's the kind of the Adama Traore V2 in terms of the emotion
he's
that he brings.
So raw. Mm-hmm.
So raw. His end product is... not very good, if we're being brutally honest. You know, it reminds me of Vinagre with the way he crosses and shoots. It's very, very...
That can be improved, though. But we said this before. If he had that, he wouldn't be on the side. Yeah.
And if Adama had that, he'd be playing week in, week out for Barca or Real Madrid. You know what I mean? It's like some things you can't teach people. And I think he'll always be that entertaining player. And I would love him to stay. If we could just lose Neto, then that's an ideal world. But yeah, I think I'd prefer to keep Gomez because I think there's more to his game long term potentially, especially at Wolves anyway.
Definitely is.
I can't remember if I said it on this podcast or I spoke to someone. I think I might have spoke to someone Saturday about it. I feel like João Gomez this is his first full season in English football. A Brazilian central midfielder who you can see his game's developing. I think if you keep holding him for another year, you're probably going to be asking for 70, 80 million if he carries on. It's almost like Bruno Guimarães territory, isn't it? Like that kind of... Bruno's better, in my opinion, but...
I think even more than that, Matt, to be honest with you, because I don't think you'd be far off that figure now if we sold him, honestly.
I disagree. I think you probably get 50 million for him at the minute. Just because it's dwarf.
But yeah, maybe. I just think you look at him. Like for me, I had this conversation in the week actually with Harry Gill, who does that Fans React. And I said, João Gomez, if I was Wolves manager, he'd be the first name on the team sheet. Forget Lamina, forget anyone else. I'd stick him there. Like for me, he's our most important player. I genuinely believe that. And I think you actually put him, if you put him around better quality players, you'll see the talent of him. I think that Brazil friendly against England, he was the man of the match by a country mile.
Mm.
Country mile. Like, absolute, like, midfield, like in his England's midfield, the Bellingham and Rice and, you know, all that talent was on that pitch that night. He stood out. He was, for me, the best player on the pitch. So I agree. I think if we can keep him for another 12 months, I think you'd be looking way north of 80. But I think we would possibly get more than 50 this summer for him. But again, I could be naive in thinking that. It could be me being a bit biased, but I think he's worth a bit of money.
Go on, Sam.
Sorry. Yeah, he's... we've seen it recently. After that England... Well, we saw just before that, after that England game, we saw the Brazilian fans saying that they don't want Casemiro near another squad again. He single-handedly pushed out Casemiro out of that squad. Now, I know contributing factor is Casemiro was dreadful this season. He hasn't been good at all, and it's been a waste of... I mean, this is United spending, so it's 60 million down the drain, and that seems like it happens twice a season for them. But if Casemiro, an ageing Casemiro, 60 million, but if we're being realistic, more maybe 40, 45, I think 65, 70 million right now for him's absolutely fair.
Mm. They're not taking Casemiro, are they? They're taking... Copper America.
But that's
what I was about to say. And potentially Neto might go to the Euros. We don't know because the squads haven't been announced. But if you're Neto and you get quite a bit of game time, I don't think he'll go because of the injury. But you get a bit of game time, you're impressed. João Gomez runs a show for Brazil. Again, that's where Wolves might look at that and think this is the best opportunity for us to sell while the stock's high.
Yeah,
but I think more so in Gomez's case. But I agree, Sam, on the Ait Nouri replacement. Yeah, I don't think you'll replace that star factor and that just technical ability on the ball. We're going to be able, like, almost like escapologist in tight areas. I don't know how he does it, but I think for in terms of how we would like to play, in terms of a direct fullback who's safe in possession, because you see the drop off when Hugo Bueno's there, especially when Totti's on that side. Teams target them. When Ait Nouri's on that side, they don't, because they know he can get out of it. I think you replace him adequately with 20 million. The lad at, on loan from Braga, is it Gomez? Estoril. Would be.
He could play both sides. He's right back, really, isn't he, bro?
Yeah. Wolves do really like him, but it's whether the money's there for him, which is annoying. But yeah, hopefully those players can go to their respective competitions, and for our sake, if they are going to go, it adds a couple more million onto the price tag. But just touching back on the Palace game, I was obviously watching it on the box quarter second half, and I know we were 3-1 down, but got to like 90, 91 minutes, and it like panned out And I thought, fuck me, it's empty. It's empty. And we meant to have the, and I dubbed it the lap of appreciation on Twitter. Someone commented saying, lap of appreciation. I was like, well, it was either that or lap of honour. And I think it's probably more appropriate than lap of honour. But did you stop behind, Sam? I know, look, you've just been pumped 3-1 at home by Palace, but I expected more people to be in there. I wouldn't have, just for context. Nah. But
yeah, I said earlier, as soon as the Eze goal went in, I was on my way out. I was already halfway down the stairs. Yeah, it's fine. But yeah, it was, in the back of my mind, I had a haircut to get to, but that really wasn't, like, I wasn't going to stop anyway, even if I didn't. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of those, like, I probably wouldn't have left on 75, but I probably would have left on 92, you know what I mean, just to beat the traffic, because I'm sat right at the top of the North Bank, and if you wait till the full-time whistle, you're stuck there for ages. So yeah. I was like, I usually leave with a couple of minutes to go to get into the concourse, but yeah, it's I wouldn't have stayed anyway. But like, I saw the pictures afterwards on Twitter on the way home, and I was like there's been about 2,000 people have stayed to watch this. Like, it was like, yeah. Damning, really. And I don't think that's because of, I don't know what to put it towards, really.
It does feel like, and some fans may say that's not how I feel, but for me it feels like the fans can't really be bothered, the players the last few weeks can't, there's nothing to play for, can't really be arsed. Some of them have potentially got eyes on international tournaments. It almost feels like Neither of them can be arsed, but they're just almost like going out of habit kind of thing. That's how it's felt.
Yeah, I don't think the weekend helped. Obviously, the result for one, and the manner of it, especially when Eze got the third goal, it was pretty much game over. Poor. At that point,
defensively shocking again at the weekend.
Absolutely. You can touch on that in a minute. But it didn't help. It was 24 degrees and it was beaming hot sun, and people thought, you know what, I'm going back to the pub. I generally think that's what it was. Yeah. But going back to the defending, because I will bring it up now, because we need to have a conversation about it now. Like, I know there's people that have staunch Kilman fans, and I know there's people, Dave more so, who really rate Totti. But If those two are playing in a back four for you as your centre halves in the Premier League, you're going down. And I'm saying that very candidly. They got pulled all over the place on the weekend, and the third goal. Lucky for you. But the third goal epitomised it for me. Like, Totti's come out to the halfway line pretty much, and at that point, you've got to take the ball and the man. You've got. If you're not going to get there, you've got to clatter everything, take everything with you, get a book in, stop the play. He's done that. He hasn't done that. Sorry, the ball's been laid off, and the Kilman's in a bit of a. Kilman, he's retreating. He's got nowhere to go, to be honest with you. A bit flat footed. The ball's gone through. He's put his hand up, like, to try and play offside. I'm like, well, why are you trying to play offside? You're retreating. There's no possible way he's ever going to be offside. And it was just, for me, it was very. Yeah, it is. No, it is habit. It just, that third goal for me, as good as Palace were in that first half, that third goal for me is pub football at best. And like, Totti looked like he had grown up playing rugby all his life, as we knew he had. Like, actually, I think this season he's come on leaps and bounds, but yeah, I don't think he can play.
Is that what you're saying?
You know what? I think in a back two, yeah, I think he's still shit.
Well,
he's
shit to average.
I think if you're playing a back four, I would argue Totti's best position is left fullback, as a no nonsense fullback, as it would be a Football Manager. Like, he's a square peg in a round. I don't think him and Kilman are good enough together to play Premier League football. I think with different playing partners next to him, potentially, yeah. But I thought they were really bad on the weekend.
I've said it many a time on the podcast. Your central defence is literally about partnerships. You could be the best individuals, but unless there's that partnership, then it's pointless. I think Kilman does need... He's still fairly inexperienced with someone his age in professional top flight football. Perhaps he does need someone alongside him who's a bit more wiser. I don't particularly like Santi Bueno in there either with Kilman. I've said it before. I've watched Santi Bueno play, and I don't know whether he's good or he's bad. Like, I just don't know. But I think the stick that Kilman gets is, I think, a little bit unjust, and I think people are putting too much emphasis on the armband. Yeah. Because in the grand scheme of things, it's a piece of fabric. It means fuck all. You've got your leaders on the pitch. It's, if you strip him of the captaincy, which people are asking for, the only thing that that does is rub him up the wrong way and potentially rub other players up the wrong way. Gary O'Neill didn't make a big deal of it when he came in and Kilman was made captain. He didn't even announce it. Someone had to ask him, who's your captain? It's Max. Yeah, yeah. Like, managers and players, personally, I don't think they put that much onus on that armband. I think it's just materialistic nonsense, if I'm honest. Because he's not the most vocal, fans will dig him out for that. And I think it's something he needs to improve on. For me, if you say, like, who should be your captain, it wouldn't be him. But I think, Sam, if you are going to strip him and he's still here, I just think it's just the negatives far outweigh the positives of doing that.
Yeah. The whole captaincy argument, I mean, I've been critical of Kilman a decent portion of the season, and it's not because of the, oh, I don't want him to be my captain. I'm not that traditional with my thinking. I think there are better leaders in this team, and I think on the most part, they usually take a hold of the game, like, you know, your Laminas and your Cunhas. Exactly. And I think what I've been most critical of him about is that vocal ability. What captain's armband or not, as a centre back, and I don't care whether you're a three or a two, one of you needs to be vocal, and it's not going to be Totti. So the moment you've asked Kilman to be, and Nelson's next to him in the past couple of games, who's not going to be vocal as a centre back, it's not his natural position. You need someone to stand up. And in that situation, Kilman needs to be that guy to stand up. And that's where I've been critical, is the fact that he hasn't been that guy. Now, we saw after the second goal, there was this little huddle that we hadn't seen all season. And I didn't actually see who was the one who brought it together. There were conflicting arguments on Twitter and stuff, some saying it was Gomez, some saying it was Kilman. I think Judah said it was Kilman. But I didn't see it. But I just thought it was, if it was him, then fair play. I think that's a step. But yeah, it's like you said, it's not the captain's armband doesn't matter, but I think group responsibility is a big thing, and I think a lot of people need to stand up and accept their own wrongdoings. And I think Kilman gets a lot of pelters, and he even liked a comment on his Instagram from yesterday saying, "I'm seeing a lot of noise around you. Just know that that doesn't reflect the fan bases." Yeah, and I think that it clearly does get to him. I think it does. And I think, because I think he's obviously a really nice lad, I think comments like that would get to him. But yeah, partners are needed. And I think he's, we saw with Dilson, when he's got the help, he's brilliant. He can be, like, start of this season, he was immense.
Yeah.
And I was really, really impressed. It got to a point where I was really impressed with him. But yeah, he just needs that helping hand, I think.
But I don't think, and I think we spoke about it again on here before, like, that aggression and that almost like extrovert personality. You can't teach that. You've either got it or you haven't. You can't teach someone to... He's aggressive in stepping out and trying to win the ball off players, but I just feel he's a little bit... I just don't think he's got that bite. But you don't necessarily need it all the time. But I think in certain, like, going to an attacker ball in the air, I just...
Van Dijk is a perfect example of that. I think he's very calm, very composed 95% of the time. And then, but when he needs to do his work and when the dirty work starts, he's screaming and he's going for everything full-blooded if he needs to. I think that he's the perfect model centre-back. And I think we need a Van Dijk, don't everyone, but like,
I think some of the criticism is a little bit unjust, but I also, you got on the one side fans who are like uber critical of him, saying strip him of the captaincy, and on the other side you've got fans saying, like, he sees these comments, you shouldn't do it. I'm almost in the middle. Like, if he's not playing well, then he deserves criticism, but then you also don't need to go nuclear and say flog him, take the captaincy off him
on a tweet that he tagged in as well.
Yeah. I saw Wolves hit the replies, but yeah, I just. He has been crap the last few weeks, but that, you know, a lot of them have.
A lot of them have.
Unless unless Kilman says to O'Neill, Gaffer, I'm finding the pressure of being a captain a little bit too much. Like, if you want to make a decision, I will. You know, I'm happy with it, but it's weighing me down. Because it isn't for me. It doesn't mean much. But if you're that person, it may be. You know, he might not be taking it in his stride. So that's the only reason I could kind of vouch for him being taken off him. But he's never going to admit that from the gaffer, because the gaffer will think, "Fuck me, he's weak as piss. So get him out of the team." You would, wouldn't you? Really.
Yeah, of course you would. And I think you both have hit the nail on the head, really. I think a lot of what you see on Twitter and social media generally is a bit of an echo chamber and a hype bowl for the most part. And I think some of it is far too extreme with it. And I think he had a phenomenal... I've never always been his biggest fan, but I think he hit the nail on the head. So I think start the season, I thought he was immense, especially when we moved back to a back three. Back five, whatever we want to call it. Thought it was awesome. I think his dip in form is no, you know, I think he's looked worse with no Craig Dawson there. And that's obvious. You know, you see Dawson, like you say, when you talk about your pit leaders on the pitch, Dawson is that leader on the pitch. You see it. He's the one getting them up in line. He's the one communicating. He's the one barking orders. He's the one doing all this sort of stuff. And that doesn't come naturally to people, like, at all. And that's fine. Like I say, with the captain, you don't necessarily have to be the biggest mouth on the pitch or whatever. But to some fans and some old school fans, people do want to see. People want to see that sort of person who's shouting and screaming, you know, in people's faces and whatever, to be that sort of captain, that leader.
But Cody was that captain, and they got dubbed shouty man. So you can't have it both ways.
No, you can't. But the thing is, though, mate, that's just Twitter in a nutshell, isn't it? Or social media in a nutshell. Like, people are going to, you know, people want one thing and then the other, you know, then people are going to moan about the other. Cody at the end was very polarised, but I think Wolves fans need a bit of a scapegoat, as you know, as tends to be the case. And Kilman being the captain and the dip in form, and because it's not one person or a couple of players who are letting us down continuously or have been over the last few weeks. Naturally, it goes on to the manager and the captain. And the manager, like you say, is a bit of a media darling, does say all the right things in the press. So they're naturally going to go on to the captain because he's the leader on the pitch. So I do think Kilman's getting it in the neck. I think it's extremely harsh in terms of some of the things that are being said. But I think you've got to be able to talk about it and criticise, or constructive criticism, I'd say, rather than criticising us being on this platform that we're, you know, privileged to have on the podcast. I'm quite comfortable saying they were poor on the weekend, but I'm doing it within, you know, I think Twitter's like 160 characters. Like, here, you can actually articulate your point, and I think people just go on Twitter and just splurge whatever they can. But they're doing it in like minimized characters, and it just is the way of the world, mate. Unfortunately, I think that is just social media in a nutshell.
Yeah, but like in the same breath, if people are criticizing you fairly, then you've got to take that as much as you were probably taking the same people saying you should be playing for England. You can't just have it all nice, especially in a position that they're in. Look, they're paid insane amounts of money. The rewards are massive. But, you know, this outward criticism in the public arena, unfortunately, is the price on the ticket, whether you like it or not. So it's whether you can move past that. It would affect me. I mean, not so much now, but 3 or 4 years ago, when we were getting stick on the podcast, I used to think, fucking hell, like, this is horrible. Like, imagine that lot dialed up by a million. It must be tough, but I'm not on 100 grand a week, so I'm on more. Liverpool game, lads. Final game of the season. Feels like, how many times have we played Liverpool on the final day since we've been back in the Prem?
Three? Third one,
at least. Yeah, I think this is the third one, yeah.
Yeah. It's another dead rubber. However, there is the fact of Klopp's last game riding on it. As long as he doesn't get booked against Villa tonight, then he'll be in the dugout. But if he gets booked, he gets a touchline ban, doesn't he? So I'm sure he won't be. Sam, in O'Neill's position now, do you still try and go with your strongest team? I don't want him to tinker like he did at the weekend when he bringing players on in like square pegs, round holes. It all felt a little bit desperate to me. But would you like to see some of the other lads be given a go? Like Tommy Doyle, where I know he hasn't played that much in recent weeks.
Yeah, I mean, they say don't change a winning team. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But right now it's broke, so I don't see why not. I think you bring in some of the lads. I think Sarabia looked really good when he came on. That's one thing I will give him. I thought, you know, he was the catalyst for the goal. I thought he looked good when he came on. I say you give him a run out. I think you give Tommy Doyle a run out and you drop one of either Lamina or Boubacar because I think Lamina was poor. I like Boubacar because of his legs, but he's a walking yellow card. I think you do give those other lads a go. It's tough, isn't it? Because you want to end the season high and take a bit of momentum into next season. Like if you're the team to shit on Klopp's, you know, farewell parade, that would be really good. Like no fist bumps at Anfield and just some sorry waves with a crying face. Like that would make my weekend. But but at the same time, it's like, I don't know, you want to give some other lads a go, and it's about finding the balance. Whether it doesn't mean anything for us, really. I'm kind of past the point of caring, but it would be nice. It would be nice to see a result in the final day, even if it was a nice 2-2, 3-3 draw. Entertaining one would be good in the sun.
I also don't think, Jord, that I know that they've faltered in the last few weeks, but I don't think this Liverpool team are going to let Klopp go out on a loss. I think that they'll just want it more than Wolves. So I'm a little bit nervous. I'm not going. I will be watching it though, but I just feel like they're going to give him one last send off and they're going to intensify.
Yeah, I think if they're still going for a league title, it would be even worse. But I think it'll be like a cauldron going in there on Sunday. I think it'll be loud. I think, honestly, I know. I think they could give us a right pacing, if I'm honest with you. If we're not at it 100%, they're going to be blind for blood. They're going to be they'll be wanting to get the score line up as high as possible. I obviously don't want it to be this way. I just feel like there's going to be so much emotion, and Klopp's going to be, like Sam said, it will be fist pumping the crowd. It will be getting them going. All the players will be getting them going. I just think it's going to be an absolute cauldron. And I'll just quickly check when you were talking there, on Sky Sports Score Centre to look at the odds for us. We're 18-1 the weekend. I think Liverpool are 1-8. Liverpool are 1-8 to beat us, and that tells you everything you need to know. Like it will be like a cauldron in there. They're not going to let him go off lightly. And I think if they get a quick start, I just fear the worst for us. I really do.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I normally go up because I've got a lot of mates up there, and I mean the match itself just gets in the way, but because of moving house, I'm not going to bother. But I'm sure those going up, hopefully the weather holds up. Weekend in Liverpool on the piss, I'm sure fans will have a good time. But I'm just going to move on to the questions, lads, because just took a note of the time there. We've had loads on Instagram. A lot of them are fairly similar. Some of the stuff we've already covered. Someone's asked around season ticket prices, when they can be expected to be announced. Now, we were speaking about this earlier, Jord, weren't we? It seems very late compared to previous years. We think that they've not announced it with... and I think it'll be after the Liverpool game. They've not announced it before the Palace game at home because I know with the supposed increase what the reaction would be.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, and I don't know whether, yeah, I think I got told it would be today at 9 a.m. as of Monday morning, and that hasn't happened as time recording. So it might be on the release of the podcast. I think it's no secret that prices are going to go up. I think, you know, I'd be shocked if there weren't. Now, I know there was some sort of fan survey, I think, that was sent out. Wasn't there a couple of weeks ago, Matt? Or was it last week?
The
Fans Parliament were trying to put like something together by last Tuesday. And, you know, I think the club are honestly just playing lip service to that of, yeah, we're listening, but you know, it was going to be 12, but we'll give you 11 instead. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. I think, let's be honest, I think I'd be shocked if they froze them. I think anywhere between 8 to 12%, which is what we've heard previously, would be fair in terms of what we're expecting. And yeah, I think there were, I think if we'd have beat Palace, the season ticket prices would have come out. I think they're waiting for a bit of good news. And I was sort of half expecting, and again, I think we need to touch on it, like that real powerful video that Reaper did and with the club and, you know, the sentiment that got, and fair play to Reaper for doing that. And whatever, I thought on the back of that, we might get that in terms of, because, you know, people are saying, I love my club, I love this, whatever. That'd then you go and lose 3-1 to Palace. Yeah, and, but I was expecting it. I was honestly expecting it. Yeah, I think if it's not Tuesday morning, I would imagine they'll probably wait till after Liverpool at this point.
Yeah. When you say, just to clarify, you said it'd be 8 to 12% increase, which you think is fair. Do you think it's fair that they're going to do that, or...?
No, I absolutely don't think it's fair that they're going to do it. I mean, look, we've had this conversation many times this podcast as well. Like, Wolverhampton is not an affluent area. There's a economic crisis going on. Cost of living's going up. It's just, I think it's the club will see it as fair because everything else is going up and inflation on everything else is going up. And I also feel like football clubs have got this power on fans, not just Wolves, don't matter who you support, where they know that sentiment will get them over the line with a lot of this stuff. And if they put season tickets up to £1,000 a season, they would still sell season tickets because they're prying on people knowing that, you know what, if I give up my season ticket, what else am I going to do in my weekend? Football is everything to a lot of people. And as I've got a bit older, yeah, it still pisses me off if we go and lose like we did against Palace, but I don't let it affect me as much as it used to. So I just think the club will play on that sentiment of fans. And whilst there's a waiting list, they're going to keep putting the prices up.
It will reduce over time, though, I'm telling you. If you get in those mid bottom half finishes,
yeah, I'll stop quick.
They will. H Davis has asked, Ben Sayerford has asked, do you think with O'Neill in charge, we'll look towards the Premier League focused transfer window? I'm going to flip that on its head and say, do you think he could be almost focused towards Championship? Because we've seen over the years, there is massive value in the Championship. There's players in a Championship that would come into our squad and really improve things, but we never seem to utilize it like other clubs do. You probably pay a little bit more than you would from, I don't know, the Portuguese league, but there's the transition's not as big, and there's some real quality in the Championship.
There is a lot more footballing quality than there used to be of that 5-10 years ago. I think with the Championship is kind of turning into a mini Premier League in the sense that these top five, top six clubs are playing some really decent football. And as a result, you've got some really, really decent technical players as well. Whereas it used to be, you know, who's the toughest, who can deal with the most long balls and that type of, you know, channel football. It used to work, but that doesn't work anymore. You see these sides like Southampton and, you know, Ipswich and Leeds have, you know, 70, 80% possession against the bottom teams in the league. And that's not because they've got, that's simply because they've got better players. So I think it's a market that we really do need to dive into. And one, like you said, that we haven't in the past. I would like to see it personally because it's we've seen with buying some of these softer European players, so to speak, that they're not often ready for it. It takes a year to embed. It takes a year and a half for them to be comfortable and trying to find some decent performances out of them. Whereas with the Championship, they come kind of rough and ready, despite some of them being really kind of, they might be small, you know, little South American tens that were great with the ball at their feet, but they've had a year or two of it rough. You know what I mean? They've been bullied around, and you know, we saw it with like Grealish when he was at Villa as a kid and stuff. Like it just made them a better player because they could deal with it. There's less rolling around on the floor, and I think it's definitely a market we need to delve into, and one that would be a shame if we didn't.
I think it's a great example of that as well. The team we've just played, you got Wharton in the middle, who signed in January. You've got Eze and Elise, who were picked from Championship clubs. I think even Elise might have been a Ready winner in League One. Like, there's, they're not all going to work out, but there's players there. Like, I really like Whittaker at Plymouth, and I think you could probably pick him up for a decent fee. So there's players there that you, that will improve. Okay, they might not be the finished article, but Wolves aren't the finished article. They'll grow with the club, and then, you know, I mean, Adam Wharton, for example, at the minute, who Wolves are linked with, you know, Bayern, reported to Bayern Munich, want to pay like 80 million quid for him. That's only for 22 million like 2 months ago. Yeah. There is value there. I wish we would exploit it a bit more.
Yeah. Another one in January that come from the Championship, who's done really well, Morgan Rogers as well at Villa.
Yeah, he looks a player, man.
He was brilliant when he played us. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. There are players there. I don't think the likes of like Sammy Schmodix are the answer with his age. No. And he's
flash in the pan, I think.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, there is quality in there. Just have a look at some other questions. LT Crocker has said, do you think Chiquinho and Mosquera will be around the first team next season? I personally think that that they should be. I like Chiquinho. He's direct. Mosquera's having a great season in Spain. The only concern with Mosquera is, lads, is he's made it very clear that he likes the sunshine. He doesn't want to come back, but Wolves own him. He's going to have to toe the line.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things. No, I was going to say, I think with Mosquera, you're going to probably have, you're at a point where if he's coming back, you're going to have to guarantee him minutes because he's playing week in, week out now in La Liga. He's Spanish speaking. You know, he's speaking his native language. Sunshine's there. I think he was holed up in the Taylor Wimpey flats in Compton when he was in Wolverhampton. So it's not much of a trade-off, is it, to be in the sun in Villarreal. And I think he's at a point, like he had a really good season for Cincinnati, wasn't it, I think? I think he was in the MLS Team of the Year. He's gone to Villarreal. I think he had one bad game, didn't he? Was it against Marseille in the Europa League, I think? And then he's just been brilliant since, from everything you see online. So I think Mosquera would come back. Well, if he's coming back, we've got to guarantee you're playing him, or you've got to guarantee him minutes. And it's whether O'Neill wants to do that. I'd be interested to see him. I'd like to see him because, you know, we've had him at the club in the under-23s and out on loan for a few years. And like, for me, I don't want it to be like one of these missed opportunities like we had with Pedro Goncalves when he just went to Lisbon. Like, we didn't actually get to see anything of him. I feel like with Mosquera, if we let him go now, we might regret it. I think he might end up going on another level.
But if Villarreal turn around to you, Sam, and say, is 17 million for Mosquera, what do you do?
Good question. Because that's probably
about five.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd really like to see him as part of that back three. I think if you got someone solid in between him, Dawson out of that kind of Dawson ilk, you have Kilman off the left and Mosquera off the right. I think Mosquera is really, really good. And I think it would be interesting to see. Problem is, do you wait too long? You know, if Villarreal offer you the money straight off the rip after the end of the season and go, yeah, we want him now, no questions asked. Or they're happy to wait and, you know, wait until see what pre-season says. Personally, I would like to, but I think 17 million is a lot considering what we paid for him. I think it was one of those steals from Matt Hobbs when he was down in South America. And I think, you know, the profit on, you know, 17 million is a good fee for a player that we haven't seen much of.
I think that's what it'll take to get him out of Wolves. I really do. 15 to 20 million. The good was, what's the point? But yeah, Big Pops has asked, and the final question. Rumours of no money for the first team again can't be true, surely. You're never, ever going to get a manager come out and say, I'm looking forward to the summer because we've got a gazillion pounds to spend. You're not, are you? And I think Wolves have always, whether it's the manager, and perhaps it's true, have pled poverty. We've got no money to spend. We're going to have to be really shrewd because as soon as you start showing a bit of leg, like, look, we've been told there's money to spend, you're going to be paying a little bit more for your players. So yeah. I would probably take those comments with a pinch of salt. So yeah, I wouldn't worry too much. There has to be money to be spent because we've got no players. But it does frustrate me as much as it does probably you lads. But and it is really, really hard to like bite your tongue. I almost sometimes write a tweet out and think, nah, I'm going to delete that. Try and judge a transfer window at the end of the window. If you're not happy with it, moan then. But moaning halfway through it is, you're just going to get yourself wound up like I have over the years. So.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I think actually what fans have got to take on board this summer as well is that business will probably get done later, which always seems to be anyway, but because of the Copa America and the Euros as well, players will go to the tournaments, then they'll have a holiday. You'll do very well to get any deals this side of the Euro starting or the start of the window, I would have thought.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think the only clubs it's going to happen quickly for are those who are bent over by profit and sustainability. So I think Everton are going to have to get the likes of Onana and Branthwaite out of the club pretty quickly to be able to comply. Potentially the same as Forest as well, but I think Wolves Forest don't necessarily have to sell. I just hope that they give him enough to work with and give him a pre-season, and then that's when I feel I could fully judge O'Neill as a manager, because
how much we need, what would you be happy with?
It depends on who's going out the door, really.
If you get Aitnori and Neto go and you get a combined 90 million for them,
yeah,
how much?
I think you need to go and get five players with that. Whether that's 90 million or a little bit more, we know there's a little bit of wriggle room to play with. So, yeah, I think we need at least three or four without selling anyone. That may include like the likes of Cicchini or Mascara coming back. I would like to see quite a lot of changes. Not like Forest level where it's like wholesale and you can't bed them in, but something to get excited about, something from a personal level to almost like fall in love again with football. Because I'm honestly done with it. I get bored of talking about it, which isn't great when you've got a podcast. I don't like attending it because of VAR. Like, I don't actually know what I'm still doing here. But I have seen a lot of it on social media. Like, I'm not the only one in feeling that. Like, a lot of fans just think, oh, what's the point? Like, we're not going anywhere. There's no ambition. But if the club were to free season ticket prices and then they sell Neto and Aitnori, but they bring in five or six players, like a couple of experienced heads, three like young, hungry players with a lot of potential, I'd feel like, yeah, you know what? We're going somewhere. I feel the connection, but I'm just not bothered. I'm just not bothered about my football club at the minute.
Sad, isn't it, really?
And George, I think you probably feel similar, don't you?
Well, I have done, yeah. And I've said that's why I didn't go the weekend. I just think the season's petering out a little bit. And I'm getting into my golf big time at the moment. Like, I've got a choice at the moment to go and watch Wolves play Crystal Palace or go and have a round of 18 holes. With the context of where the season was, I was doing DIY, but I would have played golf over going on the weekend as well. The second four, which is a shame.
I think the worst thing is after we see this video go out with Reaper, and I think it was an absolutely tremendous video, and we got, you know, the plaudits for it. I think the video team did, you know, they did a tremendous job, the media team. I think it really addressed a massive issue. And I think it's a real kick in the nuts, really, when you do something like that and you see the impact that the club has on fans, on a massive amount of fans, me included, for a long period. I think it's a real kick in the nuts, and the optics of it are terrible if you then, you know, you increase season ticket prices. I think 8% is disgusting in itself. After what we've seen of the product, I think 2 or 3 is the limit of what you could do. I think, and then to not back a manager, it's as bad as it gets. And I think, yeah, you know, Matt, you talk about it all the time, own goals. And these owners are the kings of it at the moment. And I just hope that changes, because it does mean so much to people, you know, in this local area. And even those, you know, from, you know, fans abroad, you know, it means a lot to them as well. So I think it's a real opportunity to kickstart a kind of resurgence in the fan base. But if they don't, then I can't see things changing.
Yeah, and even like Molineux, the atmosphere is terrible. Like it's rubbish. It's been rubbish all season. I think post COVID had something to do with that, but just don't think the fans are that up for it, because, like we've said, it gets to middle of Feb and you're done, and that's when I started to be like, oh God, there's nothing to play for. Can I, you know, go and see family or friends instead? But it's not the same for everyone, and for, you know, perhaps I'm quite fortunate in that respect, but for a lot of people, football is the means to an end. You work Monday to Friday to go to the football on a Saturday, and I think that video that Wolves put out with Reaper was fantastic. I had put a tweet out. It was good to see the club tackle that head on in such a poignant way, in such a captivating way. As someone who's well documented, struggled with my mental health over the years, to touch wood, I've put things in place now to manage it better. But, you know, it really did strike a chord with me. And that 10 minutes was probably the closest I've felt to the football club in the last like 24 months. But just on that, I still do get a couple of people, because, you know, I'm not scared to talk about it, very well documented, but a couple of people still message when they're struggling. And if anyone else is, please, you know, I might not be able to fix your problems, but please feel free to reach out. I'm sure I'd speak for both of you on that behalf. And I know Dave's had a pretty tough year himself and has struggled. And, you know, Dave is very good at talking to. Especially when he was going through a tough time, we used to catch up every day to see how he's getting on. And that's what you need to do. Ask your mates how they are. Ask them twice. Because a lot of people will suffer in silence. But, yeah, if you are struggling, please do drop me a message on Twitter. Can't promise I'll fix anything, but I'll be there to listen. But yeah, I think we'll leave it there. But Sam, thanks ever so much for joining again, mate. It's been a pleasure to finally do a podcast with you, and I really enjoyed it. Where can people find you should they wish to follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise, Beacon WWFC on Twitter. So that's BEEKENWWFC, because my surname's weird.
Jord, where can people find you, mate?
Jordan Russ7 on Twitter, Instagram, and Jordan Russell on the LinkedIn. I don't think it's been shouted out for a few weeks, so
it hasn't.
The LinkedIn needs to be shouted out every now and again. There you go. So yeah, LinkedIn for all those professionals.
Sam, go on, plug your LinkedIn, mate. If you need any comms work,
Samuel Beacon on LinkedIn. Yeah, there we are. Connect with me.
M Cooper writes on Twitter is myself, or Matt Cooper writes if you're a fan of Curry. One of the questions actually, Jord, was when is the Talking Wolves Come Down With Me happening? We'll try and get it done in the summer.
Yeah, I think it must be a summer special.
We'll try and get it done. But this is my last podcast for the season, with the lads doing the end of season one next week. So I just wanted to say a big thank you for everyone who's watched and viewed and reviewed and commented and contributed. It really is appreciated. It's been another tough season, but we've managed to get to the end. But it really is appreciated, even if you're in the comments calling me a twat. Thank you for the engagement. I tend to agree. You don't need to tell me I'm one.
That's just your missus in the chat, isn't it?
Yeah. On text as well. Hurry up, you twat. That's one of the reasons. Spouting bollocks again. But yeah, until next time, hopefully we've got a small crumb of comfort from beating Liverpool at Anfield. Can't see it happening. But yeah, until next time, have a great week. Try and enjoy the sun, even though it's absolutely pissing down outside. But until next time, look after yourselves and take care.